Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 14, Text 40. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Taksuran Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhistam Dapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Vanchakopa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Translation: A wife who has no sons is neglected at home by her husband and dishonored by her co-wives, exactly like a maidservant. Certainly such a woman is condemned in every respect because of her sinful life. Purport, as stated by Chanakya Pandit, Mata Yasya Grihe Nasti Bharya Chapriya Vadini Aranyam Tena Gantavyam Yata Ranyam Tata Griham. A person who has no mother at home and whose wife does not speak sweetly should go to the forest. For such a person, living at home and living in the forest are equal. Similarly, for a woman who has no son, who is not cared for by her husband, his co-wives neglect her, treating her like a maidservant. To go to the forest is better than to remain at home. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, greetings from Moscow. I'm calling through Skype. You'll hear my voice is a little bit raspy. Actually, my flight, when I arrived at JFK, I arrived early, so the flight left at 2:30, and I probably arrived at JFK at 11:30 to find out that the flight was delayed 4.5 hours. You know, it goes by increments. They don't administer the poison all at once. And it seems different people have different natures. It seems that the Russians can tolerate suffering because now what has to happen is all the people have to rebook flights because they're not just going on Aeroflot to Moscow, but, you know, maybe Moscow to Sochi, this. So many people are rerouting their flights. Lying, actually, was literally three hours. So we got in late, and I just got to Trumpuck's house. Some of you may know her. What a beautiful, what a beautiful house for the service of the Vaishnavas. Very classy and clean and big and white. And what a cook. Trumpuck's mother is. Basically, then I just took a short nap, bathed, and I'm giving the class. And I mentioned I'm very dedicated to the class, so it may not have the fluidity, let's see, that my classes hopefully usually have. Memory comes in goodness. A lot of times, I'm really studying what makes a good class. One of the elements is goodness. Now, you have to have a frame of reference, but the access to the memory will be when the mind is clear. Then you can see what's going on there, and you can remember what's going on there. I'm already forgetting. But I was saying, so let me do one thing here. So, I'm quite happy to be here on a little preaching tour. I'll stay here a few days, then go to Sochi, where another person that I know really has a wonderful place, and then Lithuania with some more people that I know. So I'll just repeat, basically what I'm doing right now, because somehow my traveling schedule has become more intense. And I'm getting some information on the Ajamil story. I'm actually getting the notes of Radha Govinda Swami, who's a godbrother and a wonderful scholar, translated from the Hindi and edited. So probably within 2 weeks, I'll start the Ajamil story, which will be very wonderful because it's about the holy name. Up until that time, I'll just, what I spoke during the week. Well, Gail's, I'm sure she's on the class, and she hasn't slept for 3 or 4 days, but she's dedicated to hearing. Her daughter got married. By the grace of God, it rained that day, because I don't think the air conditioning in the Bhakti Center can accommodate 200 people in the temple room. So, first let me share with you what a sannyasi can say on weddings. The first thing a sannyasi could say at weddings is, why is he speaking? In the sense, even traditionally, it traditionally was actually considered inauspicious if a sannyasi showed up at the wedding. Because the wedding maybe is not the time to preach renunciation. Remember that Krishna conscious truths are balanced truths. And there is a truth of renunciation. And there is a truth of detachment. One thing I explain is when the, I'm not going to say what I said, I'm just going to point so that I remember and maybe expand. When I say, when there is, when there is heavy preaching of renunciation, and there certainly is, and about household life, and there certainly is. Look at Raghunath Das Goswami's instructions. Raghunath Das Goswami's Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Raghunath Das Goswami about his family. Lord Chaitanya said joking, but half joking. And half joking means half serious. But I mentioned that the preaching is not against enjoyment per se, but enjoyment when it becomes the goal. This is kind of like a revelation that I had. And I saw this thing about low resolution and high resolution in relationship to truth. To do certain things, low resolution is required. you know, someone gave the example of, you know, when you have the computer and you have that little arrow, the mouse moves the arrow, it doesn't really have to be high resolution. But let's say you were viewing on your computer some very, you were an art director and they were sending you some things for an exhibition, it would have to be high resolution. So sometimes low resolution is okay, but often high resolution is required. And I think in terms of philosophy, you know, a lot of times high resolution truths, depth of truth has to be explored. And if we are lazy in our resolution of truth, we don't get it. For example, let's say the social doctrine of fairness. Sure, everything should be fair. But it has to be applied very carefully. You don't want it that everything's equal to the extent that people who work harder don't get rewarded. You could say, you know, fairness should be everyone has the same, but you don't want to extend it to the extent that people who work harder are not rewarded. That won't be economically, individually, or socially good. Something like that. So the different truths. Or in the Gita, you know, I mean, a low resolution truth is war is hell. Or, you know, no, war is hell. But anti-war. It can be anti-war. But what about when you have to defend? What about when there are people who are threatening you? The whole Gita is trying to explain a truth in high resolution, and that is work. Work, the word karma, is so correlated with reaction to work and bondage in the material world that the word karma and the word reaction to karma is the same word. But the high resolution truth about work is that what really makes work binding is the consciousness behind it. And not just the activities, but because generally the consciousness behind work is fruitive, then work is generally considered fruitive. But if you don't have a depth of understanding of that concept, then you will renounce things that can be used in Krishna's service, or you will renounce things that are your duties. For example, prematurely renouncing household life, having a low resolution understanding of renunciation as good. But there is a deeper understanding of renunciation that it is not good when you give up things that you need in the service of Krishna. Anyway, this is not my lecture, but I'm going on with points that I've been thinking about anyway. The relationship to the lecture, that's what I made the point. The condemnation of enjoyment, the condemnation of household life, is when a person with a when the person makes those things the goal, rather than the means. Your goalment becomes enjoyment. Your goal becomes the family. Then the, and because the tendency is there, and because the culture in which these truths were spoken was a culture designed to make intact and happy families, to invoke peace and satisfaction and the consummate and the on the material platform, so people be peaceful, and the concomitant happiness, then it was easy to make that the goal and become attached to it and see the family as your eternal relationships and seeing your house as your eternal abode or the village or place you live as your eternal abode. So that's what's condemned. Not the fact alone that there are stages of life, and for people to be peaceful, they need a certain level of affection and sensual satisfaction for their bodies. So the real understanding in Krishna consciousness is if those things are taken to the extent that we need for the higher goal of Krishna consciousness, then that's not what bhakti is against. That's not what bhakti is against. These are not the points I made. I'm just extrapolating on some points I made. And then another thing I made at the end, at the very beginning is, my talk would be short because I was the first one and I wanted to set the standard for others because it had gone on so long. And I think if you have a clear realization, the point can be made quickly and appropriately according to the particular circumstance. And I thought that people that are already sitting there for 3-4 hours, the appropriate thing was just to speak shortly. But besides that point, and this is something I thought, you know, the wedding, it gives blessings, and the bride and the groom, they give their affectionate expressions that, you know, the other person is their love of their life eternally. And we kind of know, I didn't mention it, didn't want to be a killjoy. We kind of know that that very rarely is the case. The level of initial romance very rarely lasts to that degree at the wedding. And I'm also looking at it as a perspective of a sannyasi. I don't go out of my way to go to weddings, but for many reasons, this is one I could and wanted to attend. is that, you know, everybody gives blessings, blessings, blessings. But what are blessings for? Because I think, so my point, and this is something I'm adding to weddings. Somebody was watching it. Namnas was watching it on, he was at work watching it on Mayapur TV. He said he really liked that point, especially sannyasi, is that it's not just about blessings. With blessings come expectations. And that is important as the blessings. And that's really what the yug is about. People are making vows publicly in front of family, friends, Vaishnavas, gurus, mentors. They are making vows. They are making promises. And why do you make promises? Because without fixing something in the intelligence, we will just act by the mind. And the mind will not always tell us that this relationship is living happily ever after. So what vows do, and the vow, along with the samskara of truth, to have a vow become significant, you have to have a deep attachment to truth in your consciousness. In fact, one of the main cultural contributions of the culture and society we read about in the Bhagavatam and the Mahabharata is invoking the attachment to truth so that vows will be held, and one will, which is in the Bodhi, vows will be held and our intelligence will rule our life and not just our minds in the decisions we make. We make a lot of bad decisions in the mind. A person who just follows his mind will never be successful. Who is successful? A man of character. What is a man of character? He is ruled by an intelligence fixed up in truth and solidified by vows. And this was the culture of India. The whole stories of the Mahabharata and Bhishma and everybody, Yudhisthira, the exemplars were those who wanted truth. And the people who we appreciate in our lives are people who adhere to truth. You know, I'm 68 now, so I came to India when I was 25, which meant I met people of Prabhupada's generation and maybe a little younger, or my parents' generation, that generation. I always make the comment that each generation gets a name. Each 20 years, there's a name. My parents' generation was called the greatest generation because of World War II and people making commitments and standing up to tyranny. People gone to war to defend. You know, I tell about my, I guess that my mother's cousin, you can call it my uncle, who was a rabbi and volunteered for the war because of the principle that there was tyranny to oppress others. So, important thing is vows, commitments. So a society would fortify those commitments. They would fortify two things, the attachment to truth and the commitments one verbally announces in assemblies. Now, for a wedding, it was a very heavy thing, because the tendency of the mind would be, well, you know, I can enjoy more. I can be happy more. And act whimsically. One makes vows. And our decisions determine our fate. It's so important to intelligently make decisions based on Shastra. And our lot, our decisions, you see, bhakti is well equipped with jnana and vairagya. Without jnana, without knowledge, you don't know what to do. Without vairagya, you can't do it. So a lot of times, it's not that we don't know what to do, it's that we can't do it. Because our mind is too strong and our intelligence is too weak. So if one has the samskara of honesty and makes a commitment, then the good decision will rule their whole lives, even if their mind is weak. But okay, I'm getting back to the previous generation. So the previous generation, I met people who their word was like lines in stone. I don't see that. I met older Indians who gave their word about something in their youth. I vow. And with all difficulty. And that's what tapasya is. That's what tapasya is. Tapo divyam yena kaputra sattvam shudye yasmad brahma silkyam tvanantam. What is tapasya? What is austerity? 11th canto commentary. Despite the irrational impulses of the mind and senses, we engage in our service. We're ruled not by our mind and senses. So this aspect of society, and that's the purpose of the wedding. To fortify people's commitments with expectations. Now, very quickly, the verse today, and I'll just tell the story and the points of it. And, you know, the story of Chitraketu in the Bhagavatam. The story of Chitraketu is very memorable. And it comes in the context of Vritrasura, this great demon. And Marge Prickett, as a thoughtful person, he does not allow contradictions to rest. Because if there are two truths that are contradictory and you cannot reconcile them, then you don't understand that truth deeply. And then the contradictions that you accept as truth, you're not understanding them. If you understood them deeply, they wouldn't be contradictions. There's paradoxes. The things are contradictory, but not what the problem is your understanding of the subject is not deep enough. And of course, the most common paradox is water, water everywhere, but not a drop to drink. How can that be? We're thirsty, and if there's water everywhere, why don't we have anything to drink? Well, because we're in the ocean, and water has the quality of mixing with something else and still being water. So there can be water that we cannot drink. So if you don't know the depth of water, depth of the concept of water, then the contradiction without reconciliation reveals that you don't know the tattva of water, and therefore you cannot apply it to, efficiently. So Marge Pricket represents the thoughtful disciple. The Trasura is a demon, and he's the greatest devotee. And if those are both are true, and you're bewildered about that, you don't understand fully what is a devotee and what is a demon. Your answer is low resolution, not high resolution, not depth. This is a very important point to me. And one thing I try to do in my writings and my teachings is to resolve contradictions that we somehow lazily let to sit. I see that there are certain truths that we just let sit. So it takes a kind of effort a lot of times that many people won't give or won't accept people who can reconcile issues or know the philosophy deeply. And they sit conveniently with a truth that becomes misapplied. Like I know many people are dedicated to communism because there was a truth of exploitation. There was a truth of compassion for people. But compassion without wisdom leads to folly or abuse. In the name of compassion, so many millions of people were killed. The compassion was, oh, everybody should be equal. If people are not equal, we'll have to force it. So many people are killed. But so many people, you know, avowed communists. And even my father, who later became quite conservative when he was young, that was the thing. I think he was you know, joined the Communist Party. It was just such a attractive, idealistic concept. It seems to make so much sense. But think deeper. Not just about issues at hand, but their application. So here, Marge Prickett, he's not going to stay at a superficially. He wants it reconciled. So to reconcile that issue of how someone who is apparently a demon can be a great devotee, he tells the story of Chitraketu, which will deal with the complexity of karma. And reconcile that issue. But what happens at that story, it begins with him not being able to have a son and having 10,000 wives. And then there's a philosophy in that type of context. You know, without a son in that type of culture, you know, practically there's no, you know, there were no old age homes. It was your family, and it was your son came to live with you, and then the wife would move with the son, and then you'd be able to retire, you'd be able to give over your duties and retire and do spiritual life, and the headaches and the business went over to your son. So without a son, he was devastated, and somehow he could not have a son. He had so many wives, he could not have a son. And I think one point that is shown, and I stress this very often, is you have to have all your ducks in a line. I know there's a phrase in English, you have to have all your ducks in the line. Everything has, you know, this to go perfect, something to go properly, everything has to be lined up. So for there to be happiness, everything has to be lined up. And one thing wrong, there's no happiness. And for there to be the distress, everything can be lined up, but only one thing has to be wrong. And then that maxim, a pinch of suffering is felt more than a ton of pleasure. And I described, I gave this class why to authenticate a Purana, there had to be the lineage of kings. There had to be the lineage of kings to authenticate a Purana. And why did there have to be the lineage of kings to authenticate a Purana? Because Purana means history, but what is the history of the world? The history of the world is that it is no place for a gentleman. And what is the psychology of the world? That this is my eternal residence. So the history reveals the truth of the world and enables you to put your own life in context of that history. What is that history? My father's died, my father's father's died, everyone's father's died, but I will not die. What is the history of the world? This is my eternal abode. Now, what is my conception? This is my eternal abode. What is the history of the world? This is my temporary abode. What is the ideal of the world? In the future, I will be happy. What is the history of the world? In the future, I will be gone. So there has to be lineage of kings to show that power will not bring you happiness, because even with all material power, you still are not the controller of the world. If you're not the controller, you can't be the enjoyer. Something is going to go wrong. And certainly death. To see the heto, priyate, the kovido, to love you, te yadva, matam, upaya. One who is intelligent, kovido, he searches for what has meaning. He does not wander in this universe here and there. So this story shows the king, in all the stories in the Bhagavatam, the kings, they are miserable. Because when you're attached, there's more opportunity for a pain. I was just reflecting on that. You know, the flight to Moscow, it's just, I don't know. It's kind of like, I don't know, it's like something that someone doesn't know and I just discovered, and someone said they would sponsor my upgrade at the airport. And it only cost $100. And you go into this section before the business class. As far as I'm concerned, it's just as good as the business class. You get the same service. The seats go back. It was more than enough for me. But then I was just thinking, man, for 44 years I've been flying, and I've been satisfied in economy class, and now I am ruined because I'm attached. Now I'll never be satisfied in economy class. I'll be fearful if I can't get the $100 discount. The way the world works. The more attachments, the more fear, and the more suffering. So if your acquisition of things make you more attached beyond your reasonable needs, you'll have more cause for suffering. So we see all the kings, they're fearful and we see in our own lives, you know, someone is like, there's some people with good karma, you know, they find the mate of their dreams, and they have a good marriage, and then someone gets sick. You know, and someone is beautiful and healthy and wealthy, but they can't find the perfect mate. And, you know, it just goes on and on. It just never gets lined up. I have to say, though, it's really good sometimes to hear good karmic news about people you love. I don't know if any of you know Eka Chakra. He was in Tuaca with us, and the Bhakti Center before it became the Bhakti Center. He had his PhD in ethnomusicology, and he got a very prestigious post. The program director for the Institute of Sacred Music at Yale, which is by far the best funded division of Yale by someone's donation. So it's nice to hear good news too. But what he realized is he tried for job after job after job after job, and things unfold at God's will. You know, being equal in happiness and distress is a very, very interesting proposal. Because it doesn't mean that there's not distress. For example, today the lines were 3 hours. So equal in happiness and distress doesn't mean that all of a sudden you enjoy standing in these lines. But you don't become disturbed. Not you don't get sick, but you don't become disturbed. You don't let the environmental and physical inebrieties go to the mind. It's not that you enjoy sickness, or you enjoy that. No, it's distress. Equal in happiness and distress means there's still distress. But one is equal poised. He's equal in happiness and distress. So anyway, this has happened to Chanakya Pandit, not Chichiketu. And then the other wives become envious. And I really wanted to make the point that that's kind of very natural. It's not the highest thing, but it's not unusual that we're born into this material world overcome with the dualities of desires and envy, according to the Gita. It's the core. Because false ego, ahankara, the prime characteristic of false ego is the desire for superiority. Once there's a desire for superiority, then there's envy. All our criticism, 90%, sometimes you do something constructive, 90%, it's just a manifestation of envy. The manifestation of that jockeying in the material world to feel good about our superiority. Counting our likes on Facebook is envy. It's the desire for superiority. It's just the material world is like that. So would it be any surprising that these women became envious when their husband, who has many wives, all of a sudden gives all his attention? Is it laudable? No. But we can't be surprised. We ourselves are so challenged by envy. And it's so subtle, probably, you don't even realize it. The real key is to just become pure in heart. So our bhav is not about controlling the world. Our bhav is about serving the world. And that becomes our faith. That becomes our taste. So we don't care that people are more powerful than us, more loved than us, more successful than us. It doesn't disturb us. And the other thing is, at least to be thoughtful and mindful enough that if these feelings still arise, we don't absorb ourselves in them and we don't act upon them. Okay, that's about what I can give today, considering I just got off the plane, but it was such a nice greeting here by Chumpuk's family. If any of you are ever in Moscow, I mean, this is one of the most beautiful, tasteful Vaishnav serving houses. Naranjan Swami is just here for 6 days, too. It's such a quality, essential, especially for grihasthas, is hosting and serving guests. Especially Vaishnav guests. It seems that anybody has that desire and makes the facility for it, then Krishna reciprocates. Okay, are there any questions?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Gail.
Gail, Hare Krishna. Gail, tell me that you got some rest in the last 3 days.
Yeah, I got a cat nap this morning. But the saga continues.
But anyway, the nightmare continues.
Yeah, okay. It does.
I want to say the other Sangha members, see how faithful Gail is to the class. It's more important than her sleep. Because after the wedding, I was at the Bhakti Center that day. And the next morning, I kind of hear this rumbling in this 5E, and I look in, and there's Gail in the same sari as the wedding. Which means she stayed up. But I have to say another thing. I mean, your Shaimeshri, from the very beginning, was such a dedicated devotee, you know, and, you know, she was president of the Bhakti Club in Rutgers, and it's nice to see how Krishna reciprocated with her desire to serve, her desire to preach, by giving such a nice husband who has those same values. But let that be my comment, not you express your frustration. Okay, Okay, what's your question?
Yeah, there's two things, actually. One is being equipoised in happiness and distress, even though, especially with the distress, even if you experience the distress, experiencing the distress doesn't mean what? Because, yeah, what doesn't it mean?
Well, look, you know that I'm creative. Right? I make up things that I hope are true. But it makes sense to me. There's pain and there's suffering. Right? Just like I was in Prabhupada's room. I remember this. I would go in there early, and I was the only one in there, along with his assistant, Bhavananda. And Prabhupada screamed, Hare Krishna. The nerves, he hadn't eaten in 6 months. There was no fat between the nerves and the bones. And he was screaming, Hare Krishna. But there's a difference between letting it go to the mind and looking at your outlook on life. And, you know, just like I remember when I studied philosophy, it was such a rascal philosophy teacher. He was a debauchee. And he directly made the comment that there's a direct correlation between sense gratification and happiness, right? Mm. And I said, well, if that's the case, then an ice cream cone would cure depression. So there's a difference between the sensual outlook, good or bad, and the mental outlook. And that's what I'm saying. There's still distress. I mean, you know, there may be a great devotee that loses their child or something like that. You know, it's not that it's pleasant. You know, but somehow they're able to have, you know, at least a reasonable time, a philosophical outlook, a spiritual outlook. Or, you know, it's not, you know, I've lived simply, you know, like even when I lived in Govardhan, you know, for a long time I didn't have hot water. Actually, even up to a few years ago, right? So, you know, sometimes I would boil some hot water on the stove or something like that and then pour it in a bucket. And a lot of times I would just have to take cold bath. It's not that I enjoyed the cold bath, you know, but I wasn't freaked out about it. It wasn't like, you know, depressing me that I didn't have hot water.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm looking at this distinction, and that's what I'm seeing practically. Is, you know, it's when the distress comes that you are equal. It doesn't mean that there's not distress. It's you've responded to it in a very mature way, and therefore it doesn't affect you, because most of enjoyment and suffering is expectation and not the moment.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it is the expectation of it. Like you take a cold bath, a lot of it is the expectation. But when you do it, it's not like devastating, you know. It's just the moment before you suffer, before you get into that cold water. Does that help, Gail?
Yeah, similarly with sensual happiness, you know, you can experience a happiness without getting blissed out or, you know, because.
Well, I think you don't get absorbed in it. You don't become attached to it.
That's the attachment.
Not that you don't enjoy it either, but you don't absorb it as the goal of life, because it's going to change anyway.
Mm-hmm. I like this. You don't get attached to it.
Okay, go ahead.
I just wanted to squeeze this in. You know, how to, you know, you were talking about, you know, at a marriage you offer blessings, but you should also offer expectations. Blessings being, meaning your well wishes, how to offer expectations, how to practically do that.
I think the expectations in the mind is, you know, we wish the best for you. Right? But you've made a vow and we're here watching it. You better keep it. We're not showing up, you know. We're not putting this whole show on town, you know. We're not going through all this whole show in town and then, you know, 2 months later there's a little fight and you say, oh, we're going to separate. What? You know, we promised. You know?
Yeah. So it's like holding them to their promises.
The point I'm making is, yeah, there's blessing, we're wishing people well, but we're there to witness their commitment and hold them to it, because that's what it means. Yeah. That's why it's public.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Did the divine couple leave for Oklahoma yet?
No, that's not going to happen for another month. They have like Sadhu Sangha retreats, or I don't know what used to be Pandava Sena retreats, Grihastha.
Oh, okay.
Grihastha vision retreats in Gitanagri. So about by the end of the month, they will.
Okay.
Believe me.
Okay. Well. I have to say, he was such an outstanding guy. I mean, the way he looked, you know, so dignified, you know.
Yeah, what you see is what you get. He really is a gem.
I saw that. Everyone saw that.
Yeah, and consistently. And he's consistent.
Yeah. Well, she's a good devotee.
She got really lucky.
Oh, she deserved it.
Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, Tota Gopinath here.
Kishori Radha.
Hey, Tota Gopinath, Kishori Radha. Wait, there's one voice missing.
Priya's away camping with her dad and Jaya.
Okay, we'll tell her I asked for her, okay?
I will.
Okay.
They probably don't have reception.
Okay, no, I'm not going to get something. Just tell her I asked. Okay.
I will.
Anybody else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, it's Janine.
Okay. Very good. Okay, some more people.
Hare Krishna Bhagwan, this is Bhagavad.
Right, Bhagavad. A few more people, and we'll go. Okay, anyway, we'll end for now. Bunch of culprits through this circuit.